Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty, hosted by Jodi Katz, founder and creative director of Base Beauty Creative Agency.
Hello, and welcome back to our listeners of Where Brains Meet Beauty. And hi to Eleni, our VP Client Success at Base Beauty. Today, we are bringing you episode 299. Yes, we're one episode away from the big 300. But before we jump into today's episode, I want to take a moment to talk about one of the most inspiring creative journeys our team has been on. We've been building the world of Signature Society, a brand that has not even launched yet, but is already fully alive.
Yes, I am super excited about this brand. Signature Society is more than a future product line. It's a destination for people who live and breathe elegance. And from day one, when we first met this brand and started with them on a brand fundamentals project to really envision what the brand looks like and sounds like, we knew we were building a universe and not just a brand identity. So we wanted to create a lifestyle that people want to take part in long before they ever see the product, which is super important to the founders of the brand, Angel and Matt.
This brand makes me smile because we built this whole world that's you just want to be a part of, something you can step into emotionally. You can imagine yourself in the brand. When I've shown off some of the teaser work with friends and CEOs in the industry, they're like, oh my God, I want that. And they don't even know what like the products are, which is so fun.
It's really cool. I think our team really leaned into this vision. We started by shaping this foundation that feels so timeless. Everyone who's listening, check them out on Instagram, TikTok, Signature Society Official, so you can get some of the sense of what we're describing. But everything from the typography to the color story to the textures was really chosen with this intention in mind. There's not filler content. This whole visual universe needs to feel like an exclusive club, a society where you walk through this metaphorical door and immediately feel like the best version of yourself.
And the storytelling has to match that energy. So the tone, the voice, the pacing, it's all really elegant, confident, intimate, insider, and you feel like you're being welcomed into something private and luxurious.
Yeah, what I love is how comprehensive the content ecosystem has become, even pre-launch, which means the product is not out yet, but everything that we're creating, which is live now, is part of this world that lives across social media, paid media. We're building a website. So the content has to do so many things at once. It has to tease, it has to attract an audience, it has to really create a community for these people to dive in before they even meet the product.
So please check it out. Like Eleni said, the world feels cohesive and fully realized. I'd love to hear your feedback. Like I said, people are saying they want to be a part of this and they don't even know what this is yet, which, you know, shows us how powerful the work is. Okay, let's get into the episode today. We have joining us Grace Choi, content creator and AI developer, and Emily Cammeyer Sumner. She's a content creator and technical design consultant.
They both open up about the messy, unpredictable reality of entrepreneurship, the wins, the risks, the flexibility, and the total lack of a safety net. So the episode talks about learning boundaries, balancing family life, and these two guests get really into the emotional and practical side of owning your path.
I was so amazed by these two women. So Grace, she talks about turning creativity into real ROI for brands where a single filter can spark an entire wave of content. And Emily shares what it's like transitioning from a corporate role, building her own path, and doing it all while raising a family.
They also dive into what success looks like for them now, from future apps and platforms to dreaming about brand partnerships.
It's such a smart, honest, creative, and full of those oh wow insights that make this show what it is.
Let's get into it. This is episode 299 with Grace Choi and Emily Cammeyer Sumner.
Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty. Today, I'm talking with Grace Choi, content creator, AI developer, and Cannes Lion winner, and Emily Cammeyer Sumner, content creator and technical design consultant. Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty.
Thank you for having us.
Hi, thank you for having us.
So this is actually our 299th episode we're recording right now.
Wow.
And if you stay to the end of this episode, a cake comes out with the numbers 300 on it. Because the last episode of the day will be 300.
I love it.
So thank you all for being part of this. This is our artistry and influencer theme, wisdom behind the craft. I mean, we're going to have a lot of fun talking today, right, about this. But we're going to start where we always start. This is about career journey. I know I wanted to be an archaeologist or a jewelry store owner when I was like 11 years old. Grace, we'll start with you. Your 10, 11-year-old self, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I actually didn't have like a particular profession I wanted to be, but I knew I wanted to be the best at whatever I wanted to be. I had a particular fascination with X-Men when I was younger, and I think every character has their superpower. And so I think from that, I always thought I definitely want to be like the superpower. I wanted to have that thing that was particular to me. So,
which characters? Traits did you identify with the most?
I think for me, it was probably Storm. So I definitely liked her ability to change the weather and be able to control the weather and help people or her kind of like comrades in battle when, you know, things got tough. She could just change the weather. I thought it was such a all-encompassing power and it was so powerful.
We're going to come back to the superpower because it might actually be something you do today in your career. Okay. Emily, what was your dream?
So I've had a dream of working in fashion pretty much since I was a kid. My mom knew that I loved to sew and that I was interested in all things fine art. And so she put me in sewing classes with a neighbor in her house. This amazing woman had like pattern making room in her house, and she had like a room that was just fabric. And I kind of learned how to create there. And then that kind of transitioned to, I grew up in Chicago. And I started taking early college courses at the Art Institute of Chicago when I was in sixth grade. I think my dad would take me on the train. And then when I got a little bit older, I took the L on my own and just would take everything from figure drawing to color theory and all of these things. And that ended up being exactly what I wanted to do for a living, which merged me into fashion. But it was probably like an early, I love dressing up my dolls, and then we went from there.
Did you cut up the Barbie clothes and, you know, kind of recreate them?
I definitely cut the Barbie's hair. I don't know if I was cutting up the Barbie's clothes, but I remember before knowing how to sew, like my mom would give me all these scraps of fabric because she actually was the one who got me into sewing, that I would like tie all these little outfits together, that I would like cut them. And then it was like almost early pattern making, but just straight out of fabric before I really could use a sewing machine.
So our theme is artisan influencer, but I want to talk about the things that you do that are kind of like more traditional jobs, right? And then link it back in a few minutes to the world of influencing. So Grace, we're going to start with you. AR, AI developer. Tell us what this career is and how you ended up there.
So AR, AI developer. So essentially, it basically means, I think to a layman, it's I create social media filters. And so those beauty filters, specifically in the beauty industry. So those filters that you see on TikTok, or it used to be Instagram, but they kind of got rid of that. But for more so TikTok, most of the viral ones that you see in beauty for a brand, say, actually, one of my most famous, my first one was the eyebrows one, where everyone kind of shaves off their eyebrows, and kind of that was my first one that went viral. But when you see the ones for brands, say, I did most of the Patrick Ta ones, I did most of the Benefit ones, I did a Dior filter, I did NARS filter. I could go on and on. So yeah, I mean, I do a lot of brand filters on social media. But my job is, whether it's AR, AI, or regular content, is to make viral beauty content through a campaign on social media. So that's my kind of overarching job title.
And the job you had before AR, AI existed was what?
I actually started a startup. I created a makeup printer that prints makeup, and Ulta Beauty actually invested in that startup. But COVID happened, unfortunately, and so that winded down. And that actually led me, however, to what I do now, which is AR, AI development through kind of like augmented reality filters. And at that time, exactly at the time that I winded out, TikTok Effect House just started, and they opened up their beta program, and they had extended me an invite to the private beta. And I thought it would be a great idea to have kind of interactive stencils for your eyebrows, because I just thought that was a great idea, and it didn't exist at the time, and people were using physical stencils, and I have no eyebrows. And so I thought that would be a great idea, and it was, and I created that as a filter, and I think my career just started booming from there. Brands reached out, and they decided they wanted to do their own filters, and that's how my career started in this space.
That's so cool. So Emily, the title technical design consultant, what's the path to that role?
So when I went to school for design, the program that I graduated from was very rooted in learning the fundamentals of why things fit well. And so I went to fashion design school, and they really imposed it maybe upon us that it was important to learn how a garment fit well, not that mm-hmm. it was just beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then especially for market, like, you know that you buy a pair of jeans and they fit well, you will keep buying from that brand over and over and over again. They don't fit well, mm-hmm. bye-bye. You probably mm-hmm. will never shop that brand again. And so it was a really good thing to learn. And so when I graduated from college, the honest answer is I was like, okay, creative design job pays this, technical design job pays this.
More.
Way more. And so I was like, okay, that's an interesting route. Really what a technical designer does is fits a garment to a body and also thinks about who the consumer is, the perfect consumer for that brand. And it was such an interesting role because what I ended up doing throughout my career is almost fusing those two things together. I've been both a creative design director and a technical design director, which I think made me better at my job because I understood it through both lenses. And the real fun kind of started when my last in-house role for a brand is called Universal Standard, and they are a size-inclusive women's contemporary brand. And I had never worked in the plus-size space before. I'd mostly worked in juniors or women's. And to have the task of making single piece of clothing aesthetically the same across women's size 0 to 40 was such a wild process for us, was learning how to do this. And that was actually kind of what started my consultancy after I left Universal Standard, was seeing that there were so many brands that were interested but cautious mm-hmm. on extending their size offerings. And I had all of these learnings, and I was like, how do I help more brands make this decision without feeling like there's so much friction?
We pair people together on this show the best that we can. And I just think it's so crazy that you're both literally technical people and content yeah. creators. But
in very different ways, yeah. which is right. what's really interesting.
But it's just sort of magic how this happens. And the fact that you both have this wealth of knowledge is very specific mm-hmm. space, right? And I can tell you that from the rest of the day, if we paired you with other people, they wouldn't have been matched this way. So this is really fascinating how the universe delivers, because you have these paths of creating this, technical technology, and then content creation, joins you as well. So this is going to be a really fun conversation. Okay, so I understand what these technical jobs are, and they sound fascinating. Please, Grace, layer in for me, the content creator.
Yeah, I was actually just thinking that. I was like, Emily, how can we work together? I'm literally the business owner. Anyway, so the content creator part comes in actually mostly in two ways. So let me do the unsimple way mm-hmm. first. The unsimple way is it's inherent in my job where I create a filter. People come to me to create a filter because it's a really big ROI, because when you, say, hire an influencer to create one piece of content, say it's $5,000. But if you come to me to create a piece of content, you'll pay me my rate. But it's not only for my, say, launch video, but this one piece of this one filter, it inspires other people to create, say, their own other influencers' content. Mm-hmm. So what I am is an influencer's influencer. Mm-hmm. So as, for instance, a makeup product is something that an influencer uses to create content, like, say, a new palette. It's like, I have this new palette, I'm gonna create content. A filter is essentially a product. You create a product, and essentially I create a product that an influencer uses to create content. So say a brand comes to me and they say, we want a filter for this, new launch that I have. They're not paying me just for this one video that I'm going to make for them or with one filter. They're paying me for the possibility of hundreds and thousands of videos mm-hmm. for that possibility, and for me to get that right every single time. So for instance, for Fenty Beauty or whatever other ones that I've made go viral, we had one filter, they paid me one rate, and we got 200,000, 300, actually that one made 500,000 videos wow. from that one wow. filter. So the ROI is very different for that. So that's how content creation is made from that side.
So you're the catalyst.
Yeah, I think filter creators, not just my niche, because every filter creator has a niche. So for instance, like there's another filter creator that's my colleague. He's more on the movie side. His niche is movies. His clients are Netflix mm-hmm. and like Hulu, right? But yeah, we are at least on these platforms, especially when it was a big heyday, we created the trends on those kinds of things, on those, you know, areas.
This so is cool. So cool.
Yeah, it's very cool.
It's like very behind the scenes, yes, of how these kind of platforms kind of work.
Well, it makes me think of like the work we do at the agency. A lot of it is stealth mode, right? Mm-hmm. Like the end user consumer doesn't like actually know what happens behind the scenes to get these things moving.
Yeah.
Like seeding to celebrities, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's very stealthy, very behind the scenes. Yeah. It's let us replenish you, or like notable makeup artists and hairstylists, let us replenish mm-hmm. you. What do you need in your kit? And then when it pays off really big, right? So I love hearing about this. This is so fascinating.
Yeah.
Okay, Emily, what was your transition into content? Because we've worked together.
Yeah.
We work with my team.
It's interesting because I think my kind of route is one you've heard many times. I was working in the fashion industry. I had a perspective. I had a lens that I was talking about fashion, but not on a platform or any way. And I was nudged by my husband and one of my best friends, and they were like, you have really interesting perspective on the fashion industry. You should, you know, in the days of blogs. Hmm. So like started doing long form content. And then it was just fun. Like I loved talking about fashion. I loved talking about skincare. They were just things I was passionate about. And then I was talking to women who were also passionate about it. And it wasn't until 5 years ago, I was a director for Universal Standard and doing content creation. And I didn't realize that all of a sudden I had two full-time jobs until I went to a general checkup at my doctor, at my GP. And he was like, how are you? And I started crying. And he was like, just to be transparent, that's not a normal reaction. And I was like, I'm really tired. He's like, why are you so tired? And I was like, well, I'm going to China for a month for my job. And then I also was training to run the New York Marathon, which I ran live on Lululemon's global Instagram.
Oh my God.
Then I was also, I think I literally came back and then I hosted an event for Burberry and then was also waking up at 6 a.m. to produce content, then go into my job, run a team, and then literally put all of my things in a running backpack and run home from the office so I could get my miles in. And I was like, I obviously had nothing left in the tank. Literally, like nothing left in the tank. And my husband said, why don't you think about content creation full time? And I was like, well, that's terrifying. Mm-hmm. I really love getting a paycheck every 2 weeks and having a steady job. And he was like, well, then you have to go do it. Because you're scared of it.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, you're annoying. And
what a
you're
partner,
so
Emily.
Right. He's the best. But he also like gave me the green light to say, go do this for a year, see if it works. If it doesn't work, you can go get another fashion job anytime. There are a million jobs out there. But you will never regret trying to work for yourself. And that was 5 years ago. Like, here we are.
I started, that's amazing. Yes, let's clap for this. I started my agency 18 years ago and I had the full support of my husband, but I didn't get the pep talk. It was just like, I guess I'll just like, I can do this. And then if it doesn't work out, I'll just freelance or get a job.
Yeah.
And I can say like, you know, it's probably really hard to have a spouse who's an entrepreneur and like, you know, where the what's coming next is a lot of unknown. And my husband's lived with us for 18 years, going on 19 years. And he never doubted me, even when it was like, when are you going to pay yourself? Can you pay yourself? But it's so nice to have that support.
Yeah. Well, I think it was made easier by the fact that he is an entrepreneur. And when we first started dating, he quit what I thought was an incredible job to start a company with his friend Dave. And I was like, who is Dave? And you're going to not pay yourself. And that worked out. And so he is so well-versed in like making big crazy decisions that like may work out, but there's like a 90% chance they won't work out. And so I think his viewpoint really helped shove me, because honestly, if I were married to the like steady paycheck person, I would probably still be in my like corporate fashion job.
This is all like scary stuff, the things we're talking about, like taking the leap. Grace, what has been the scariest part of this journey for you?
I think not having a safety net, probably. I think out of all my friends, so I come from a very, I think my friend group especially, because I did all the very like safe things academically. I went to two Ivy Leagues, like I went to Cornell, I went to Harvard Business School. So amongst all my friends, you know, they all have the steady paycheck, the picket fence, the kids, and you know, everything. But I think I'm like the crazy aunt kind of lady, you know, which I love, you know, I love
crazy aunt.
Yeah, that's who I am. I'm, you know, it's just me and my dog. So, you know, I'm 42, I'm single, but I've always known that I'm always someone who just lives to the beat of my own drum. And I've, you know, never had kind of like a safety net after, you know, business school really. And I think the scariest thing is like, you don't have a, you know, a steady paycheck. I don't have a trust fund. You know, my dad passed away quite early. And so I think going out and risking all the time, and there are times when there is not work, right? Because the economy is not very steady all the time. And so just knowing that in your mind, like, well, I made it work one time when it was really, really bad, you know, and I can make it work again. And just knowing that, I think for me, I know myself very deeply, and I know that there's nothing in the world that I can do better than what I do now and what I do also as an entrepreneur. That's why I just do what I do, because I know I wouldn't be a good corporate person. You know, that's just not who I am. And so I think like the most challenging thing is like the uncertainty, but you manage it because you know.
Well, it's very like in this industry, it's feast or famine.
Yeah.
Like COVID was terrifying because I had literally just quit my fashion job and then was doing content creation full time. And then COVID happened and every marketing budget went locked down. Mm-hmm. And as rightfully so, but I was like, oh man, should I have quit my job? And my husband was like, you think your startup fashion job was safe? Valid point. Okay. That makes sense. But it is like, we go through these like peaks and valleys of when brands need like tons of content or it gets like a little bit quiet and we are ramping up into the, what is the most insane time for every content creator, which is holiday. And all things leading into holiday. And it almost is like sometimes hard to take a step back, especially during holiday time, and not say yes to all the things you want to do, because you can easily burn yourself out really quickly. But at the same time, you're like, well, this is like when my business booms. So it's sometimes hard navigating how much you should take, because this is the great time.
Right. Before we move on, tell me about your dog, Grace.
Oh my God, he's a Maltipoo. He's a Pisces. But he's 8 pounds. He goes everywhere with me.
Is he here?
No, he's not here. I left him at home. But his name's Morty. And so I'm going to try to feature more in my content. So, yeah.
Is there any, are there pets at home?
Oh yeah, Roxy. Roxy and Morty can hang out. Tell us Roxy, about Roxy. Just filmed a dog campaign yesterday.
Oh my God.
Because we'll chat about this. I'll give you my the contact. Actually Roxy, I have a goal that she gets at least 2 dog campaigns so that I can write her off on my taxes.
Oh my God, yeah.
Wait, I'm sorry. I got distracted. Can you repeat this?
So, there is a threshold which I believe is about $8,000, and making sure that your pet is earning that, because then you can write off all of their food, vet bills, pet insurance, dog walker, off on your taxes.
So
because
the
they are an earning.
Okay. The dog earns $8,000 or more, and then the dog's in business, the dog is an entrepreneur, and the dog is writing these things off.
Also, luxury pet is a hot market. Yes. Like, you got to get them. It's so crazy. Like, my content creator friends who are in beauty, they, not that they don't love their dog, but they got a dog, and they're, like, actively, like, marketing their dog to be, a content creator.
The pet accounts?
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember, there was a publicist I was talking to recently, and he was like, I can't even tell you how much I just paid a cat. He's like, yeah. I have to pay a cat a lot of money. So crazy. Like a lot of money.
All right, this is actually territory I didn't know we were getting into.
Yeah, I know.
We're talking about the creator economy for pet, and probably a lot of pet beauty, pet grooming.
Dolce & Gabbana has a pet perfume.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they do.
Right?
Okay.
Questionable.
Get Roxy a deal.
Roxy actually would be really good for a Dolce & Gabbana.
So I would like to show you a picture of Kimchi.
Oh my god, Kimchi needs content. Kimchi needs an account.
So this is Kimchi. I think of myself and therefore Kimchi as a reluctant influencer. Mm. And years ago, Eleni set up an account for me on Instagram called The Reluctant Influencer, and I've never posted anything because I am the reluctant influencer. Mm. But I don't know that Kimchi has it in her to take direction well.
I will tell you, we filmed a pet food and treat campaign yesterday with Roxy and her two dog besties in our apartment. And I roped in my toddler. They were all dressed as cowboys. And I will tell you, it was mayhem and hilarious. Okay. I haven't laughed that much in a while.
So now we just went from pet to kids. So let's talk about kid a second.
Yes.
Right? So there are people who put their kids in content. There are people who don't put their kids in content. Tell me the process in your household thinking about like what is right for our family and why.
That's a great question. I think this is a wildly personal thing for every person. I judge no one as long as, you know, you pay your kid if they're earning money. But for me, my journey to having a kid was such a public one that I went through 5 years of IVF.
Aye, aye, aye.
My community went through that journey with me. And so I very much felt like I couldn't be open and honest and show them the entire journey and then be like, oh, no, but you don't get to see the kid. Mm. And so he's lightly in my content. I would probably say he shows up 10% of the time, which I feel very comfortable with. My husband also feels comfortable with. I think you have to be on the same page about whether or not your kid is being shown. I also don't feel like I'm some crazy celebrity that like people are going to be running down the street to see my kid. Like I'm not Kim Kardashian. So I feel comfortable with that kind of light amount. And I think that like I have so many people that respond specifically to seeing Eric in my content because they were along for that IVF road with me. And so they are just like so happy that he's here.
Mm-hmm. It's really sweet. How old is he?
He's 17 months.
Oh, it's
and he looks like he's like 12. He literally just wore 3T the other day and I was like, oh my God, he's going to be a giant.
So is it possible that he might have genes that make him tall?
Yeah, just like a few with me being 6 feet and my husband being 6'2".
Oh my God.
One of my girlfriends was joking. She was like, you don't need a college fund. You need a food fund.
Yeah.
You mentioned paying your child. So for anyone listening, can you talk about like we learned about the dog and the taxes. What is the process for actually paying the child?
Yeah. So whenever he is in content, especially paid campaign content, whatever that content payment is from that brand, I pay him into his own I believe it's a 501c3, which is like an education, education. I think you can use it for a couple of other things now, but we pay him all of that, and make sure that that's going to help pay for college or whatever college is going to look like by the time he gets there.
So that's an orchestrated effort that you make with your husband or your business manager to set aside X percentage of the fees into his account.
Yeah.
And then you can show him when he's older the transactions.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What about the dog? Does the dog get reporting like this?
The dog gets reported what she makes and itemized out what her expenses are, but she doesn't have her own bank account. I don't know if they would give the dog a bank account.
Right, but the dog doesn't have a social security number. So how does the dog have a tax-related income?
Well, I just put it on my taxes that she's made this much from these.
Okay, this is fascinating. So you're going to be diving deep into this world.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's an expense, right?
My accountant hates me, just to be totally clear.
Okay, so the dog is your expense, just like your supplies in your office are. Yeah. Okay, got it. Okay, let's shift off.
I had to shift accountants as well because my old accountant was like, we're going to pay who what?
the business of being a creator.
Yeah.
We were talking on a previous episode today about how, like, in Hollywood, there's a system, right? You're, you're the next, like, you know, leading man, or you're the best, like, best friend. And there's a whole system around that that's like, okay, these are the parts I'm going to put you up for. This is the haircut you're going to have. This is the, these are the type of premieres you're going to go to. This is what restaurants you need to be seen. It's very, very highly orchestrated. Yeah. And there's people behind the scenes who have done this a million times pulling the strings. This is uncharted territory, right? And those mechanisms don't exist as a formula yet. So, Grace, we'll start with you. Like, how are you defining what success is, and how do you define what you want this creator career to look like?
I think I'm very sort of business-minded. Mm-hmm. And so I would say, in terms of my creator career, again, it's kind of monetary, right? Because this is a business at a certain point. And so, from a creative side, I would say I'm putting out content that is helpful for people, that is educational, and it helps them learn about beauty, learn new things. I think that's primarily very important for me. But again, the other side is you still need to monetize. So me putting out content without being able to kind of monetize it really doesn't make that much sense. So I think in terms of how do I monetize it, and I think your question about, like, it's uncharted territory, how do you kind of, like, attract those kind of roles and things like that? And I think it's sort of like putting out the work that you want, or putting out the niches you want to attract and those deals that you want to attract. And so I think, like, putting out, I think, what was the exact question? I don't want to keep rambling.
Well, you know, there's structures and places in other businesses that sort of define how to get to success, right? This haircut, this role, win an award, boom.
Right.
This doesn't exist here, right? It's a choose your own adventure kind of right now, which, you know, in some ways is lovely. In other ways, it could be really overwhelming.
Oh yeah. So what's the next step? Is that the question?
And like, what is the journey? Like,
I think for every
success.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I think for at least you're right. So in Hollywood, it's like you're an actor, right? Or if you're a model, you're a model, right? I think if you're a content creator, you can be. It's like a hyphenate, because you could be a painter and content creator, or you can be an interior designer and content creator. You could be so many different things. So, or you could just be, again, I have lots of friends who are content creators who are just content creators, which is great, right? They just want to make beauty content and that's it. But I think my next step, because I didn't figure this out for a very long time, but I think my personal next step is to create my own, pretty much probably my own app or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, actually create a business out of what I've been doing, because I've been using other people's platform. I've been using TikTok and Instagram, or like things like that, which I think it's good for discovery, but I've seen things that it's lacking, and I think I could provide the same experience working with other brands, as well as, like, you know, being able to provide an experience that people have been asking for. So
you're going to build us, the world, the next great platform?
Yes.
Wow.
So that's what I'm working on. And so that's what's my next.
That's exciting. Wait, we heard it here first.
Yes.
Has this been ever talked about?
No.
Okay.
I've never publicly talked about it.
I think they call this a scoop.
Yes, it's a scoop.
What's the timeline for this?
I mean, I'm starting to work on, I've been prototyping it, but it's probably, I mean, it's a long process. It's pretty, like, in deep, because it's AR and AI. So I'm looking to launch it probably next year sometime. So,
Right. You heard it here first.
Yeah.
And, we want updates.
Okay, we'll do it.
So, Emily, how are you defining success, and what is the path to that?
I think for me, obviously, there's a monetary number. And so I hired a manager about a year and a half ago. And so when we discussed what this year looks like, I was like, this is my number.
Oh, so you pick, like your brand, a revenue number.
And honestly, the benchmark that it is based off of is my highest earning year was actually when I was pregnant, which is a wild statement, but I think I was so happy that I was just like, I hit the ground running. But I was like, okay, well, if I could make that much, and it was actually 4x what I'd ever made, I was like, all right, well then let's level up. And so I gave her the goal, and I was like, I know this is a stretch, but, like, let's see if we can do it. And so far we're on target, which I'm very happy about. But for me, it's not just like, monetary is great, but it's also, am I working with the brands I want to be working with? Like, am I happy with the people I'm working with? That, to me, is also very much success. Or it is, I co-designed a jewelry collection with Sophie Ratner, the fine jeweler, about a year and a half ago. That to me was success. Like having a beautiful product that I loved and with someone that I was already wearing her jewelry every day. Those to me are measures of success. And then on top of it, like, do I get to do fun things and bring my family and my friends along for the ride? Like, I really love the perks of getting to take my friends to experience something really fun. Or my husband. Like, my baby, I turned my baby moon into a partnership with the Four Seasons in Anguilla. And we got there and he was like, they had very, very generously given us a villa. And he got there and he was like, I love your job. I love your job so much. And should we invite all of our friends? And I was like, no, this is a baby moon. But I think if you can't enjoy these moments and these fun things that come with the job, if it just becomes so overwhelming, like it, I think that takes away from the success.
So this is a really good anecdote, the story about the villa, for something that's on my mind. And the reason why I am a reluctant influencer is I spent a lot of my early years in my life not really, not having my head where my feet were, right? Like being really distracted or not able to actually like really connect in the moment. So I've released that for myself and really trying to stay focused and in the moment. So as someone who's a content creator and you're on your baby moon, that means are you kind of like running all the time? Like, oh, this would be good content. All this would be good content. So like, are you on two paths? Like you're trying to be like the human Emily.
Yeah.
And then you also are like, well, content.
It's, wow, that's such an honest and difficult thing that happens. One, thankfully I have a husband who will just be like, we're done. No more photos. We're cutting it off. Also, most of my very close friends are not content creators. Also, most of my close friends don't even have Instagram, which is hilarious. And so honestly, when I'm on vacation with them, I kind of have to say, okay, I'm going to go create content at these times, or I need one of you to come take photos with me at these times. And I just kind of like say that these are the windows that we're working and doing this a little more free flow when I'm just on vacation with my husband, but you have to give yourself parameters. Otherwise, everything is a content moment. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you didn't go on vacation. You just worked in another place.
Right. Right. So, this is on my mind a lot because I really do practice now trying to have my head where my feet are. And I like the seduction of success. It's actually a book we wrote. It was called The Seduction of Success from the podcast. It's like a really real, it's real, right? It is like seduction could be amazing because like you love your job, but it could also be like damaging to like, well, what are my goals outside of just work, right? Like, how do I want to be spending my time? Where is my joy? It can really get in the way of it. And you know, this example I think is such a good one, and I'm sure so many content creators suffer with this because they're not able to say, okay, that work hour is over and too bad that these palm trees would make beautiful content. I'm not capturing them now.
Everything is beautiful content. Right. Everything could be a content moment. At some point you have to decide that I am going to be present in my life. Like I've actually very much had to make a concerted effort with my child for when, like, I am very gracious and very appreciative that I have a nanny because she's there during my work hours and my business hours. She leaves at 6 p.m. From 6 to 8 p.m., it's I'm on deck or my husband's on deck. I found myself sitting there on my phone, but my kid's here and I'm with him and I'm watching him, but like, I'm not enjoying my time with him. And I literally had to like snap myself out of it and be like, no, 6 to 8 is Eric time. Like, this is my opportunity to be with my kid, but it's so easy to just keep scrolling or like just quickly, I'm going to answer this email real quick. And it's a slippery slope. Even my husband said to me the other day, he was like, and he's, you know, a tech CEO. He's endlessly just, let me answer this one email. We have to remember that, like, your life is passing you by. You know, work is always going to be there. Spend your time with your friends and family as well.
So Grace, let's end on this topic for you, the seduction, the like, you know, taking a break from work. I would imagine that the work you do in building the apps and then promoting them is very, very time intensive. How do you put parameters up around like what are working hours versus, you know, creator hours?
Yeah. So two things. So I would say my work, it kind of, to be honest, the work never stops for me. I mean, I think I do have boundaries. I mean, also another thing is another part of my work is just doing like regular beauty content as well. So I actually kind of like use, I remember something that Ruth Bader Ginsburg once said that she used, I remember she used motherhood as a break from her studying law mm-hmm. and law as a study break from motherhood, right? And so I kind of bounce things off of each other. So when I'm creating beauty content, I go out to an event. So in beauty, you have a lot of events to go to. And so I'll go to an event and do content, but then you burn out because there are a lot of like events to go to and content. And then, so I'll go back and I'll start like doing app stuff or like doing kind of like development stuff. And then when I burn out from that, I bounce back to like other beauty mm-hmm. content. So I think diversification of work really helps. Also, I think one of my kind of guilty pleasures of taking a break / procrastinating is cleaning. Mm. And so that
you can come over to my apartment anytime.
Yeah, no, but it's just, I love like it's, cleaning is great because it's one of those things where it's like you're not waiting for anybody for a response or like whatever. It's just very cathartic and like it's easy to do. So that's another thing that I use to kind of diversify chores or things, you know, to like kind of diversify things and ease stress and stuff. But yeah, unfortunately for me, I think I haven't done this thing where I say, okay, now maybe I will take a break. I'll take maybe like a Saturday off and I'll say, I'm not going to do anything today. But then usually my work hours are, I wake up pretty late. Maybe I'd say I wake up at like 9 or something like that. But then my work day goes until like 10 p.m., 11 p.m. But it's always constantly bouncing around from things. And I think in exchange, I'm always, it's flexible for me. So I can take a nap if I want, you know, or I can go cook something if I want. So that's my exchange.
The flexibility of it is so nice. Yeah. And like also not to make you feel guilty, my kid goes to bed at 8 and then my husband and I work again until God knows what time. But like the flexibility mm-hmm. of the job is something I didn't realize how incredible and how much I appreciated it until I took a consulting role for a corporate fashion company a couple of years ago. Cause I was like, oh, maybe I want to be back mm-hmm. in the office again. And then I was there and I was like, oh, oh no. But it is like, especially as a mom, the flexibility mm-hmm. of being like, I want to go hang out with my kid for 10 minutes. Like mm-hmm. I can go do that. Or I really want to go have lunch with my girlfriend mm-hmm. who I haven't seen and I want to catch up with. Or like, it just is the most flexible job, mm-hmm. which I think is incredible. Also, you can endlessly work. So mm-hmm. you have to figure out what your right. boundaries are.
Exactly. So I want to close, Grace, by doubling down on this cleaning thing. I had a really tough week and I decided to use some time to reset my travel toiletry bag, right? Because like I travel, and yeah. I'm like, wait, where's this? Where's that? And I like ordered all new things. I like did a whole like, you know, kind of puzzle to try to fit all the people. Like,
I'm
trying to like have less items in my toiletry kit and it's become two bags. I just feel like I really want it to be one small, yeah. but I haven't gotten there. Anyway, it just felt so good to like get new little
reset. You know,
bottles and fill them with the shampoo and fill them with the conditioner and all this stuff. And it is really freeing to just have this like simple task to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is really fun. We have one more part of our show before we close out this episode. It's our game. It's called Blend It or Block It. We're going to give you a beauty trend or technique and you'll tell me if we're going to blend it, which means it belongs into your routine. You're going to blend it into mm-hmm. your routine, or block it, which means cancel it, move on. Okay. And then you'll explain. You'll tell us why. Okay.
Okay.
So there's no wrong answer. This is all about you. So Emily, we'll start with you.
Okay.
White eyeliner on the waterline to open up the eyes. Is this a blend it or a block it?
Oh my God. I think it's a block it because I did it in middle school and I can't go back.
What about you, Grace?
Yeah, I would say block it. I mean, you could put so many more neutral colors if you want to.
I would also say instead of, I really like, as I've done today, is a little bit of highlighter in the corner of your eye because it really brightens up your eye and opens it up in the way that people are using white eyeliner.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Okay, next one. Grace, we'll start with you. Dot contouring, applying bronzer, blush, and concealer all at once before blending. Is this a blended or a blocket for you?
You know, I would say you do you, because I mean, I can't comment on like other filter creators' work and stuff. And also, I feel like if that's what they like, they should do you, you know? So
I would say. Emily, what about you?
I physically can't do it. I would look absolutely insane. Like, I can't contour to save my life. So probably a blocket.
Okay. Emily, this one's coming at you. It's monochrome blush using the same shade on cheeks, lips, and lids. Is it a blended or a blocket?
Blended. I love it. I love the blush cheek to lid and then pulling it into the lip. I think it's a beautiful look.
And is that something you wear often?
I don't know if I'd say I do it often, but like springtime every once in a while, or like a beautiful blush color and you're like, oh, this is just so pretty and yummy. And you're like, I want to use it everywhere.
Grace?
Yes, blended. I think it's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay, this is fun. Let's keep going. Concealer lips. Applying concealer over lips before gloss for a nude base. Grace, are you going to blend it or block it?
I mean, blended, but like it's been there for a while. People have been doing that forever. Mm-hmm. I don't know why this is like, I guess it's a resurgence. Like
everything comes full circle.
Yeah. I've been doing that since the 90s. So, I mean, I've been blending. So, you know.
Emily, what about you?
I've never done it before.
Oh, it's.
I know. Like, where have I been? So, apparently it's going to be a blend it, because I'm going to try it tonight. Yeah.
So I will tell you that, you can't use like the Stay Put products.
Okay.
Because the concealers have an oil and the Stay Put reacts. So like you can only put a non-Stay Put product if you're going to do the concealer. Let's do two more. Emily, we'll start with you. Mascara on your lower lashes only. Blend it or block it?
Only?
Only.
Never tried it, but I'm going to say block it because I'm more of a mascara on both top and bottom lash kind of girl.
Grace?
No, block it. I have boneless eyelashes, so mascara doesn't go on my lashes. Like, it literally flops down.
I never put mascara on my lower lashes, but it just gets so, like, pilly, you know? Mm-hmm. It drops and gets, like, that kind of dark.
You need a tubing mascara.
Yeah, I've become someone who I just want to focus on the lashes I was born with and not add accoutrement. Mm-hmm. I'll curl them, but I think I'm not really into mascara right now.
Well, it's trending. The no mascara look has definitely been trending.
Last one, Grace, we'll start with you. Glitter tears. Are you placing shimmer or glitter below the eyes for a glam crybaby effect? Blend it or block it?
I'm too old for that. I can't block it. I can't.
Emily? There's no way. I'm 40. Absolutely not.
This was so much fun. Yep. Thank you so much for this episode.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Where Brains Meet Beauty with Jodi Katz. Tune in again for more authentic conversations with beauty leaders.